All right, new edition of the Big Three podcast. Brian Robb here, the Boston Sports Journal, joined by Michael Pina of Vice Sports. Mike, it's feel like it's been forever that me and you have actually talked. We've missed each other in the last two podcasts, but in the meantime, the Celtics have rolled off a historic winning streak here. So should we just like, maybe this is, we're just not meant to talk to each other.
Message here. They're clearly going to lose their next five games. I don't think we haven't even really talked since it was like a few days after the Hayward injury, and then I don't think we've caught up at all. And
yeah.
Obviously a ton of stuff has happened.
A lot of stuff has happened. Some of it not so good, but most of it very good for the Celtics. And I guess, I mean, there's a lot of places to start here. I think a place to make sense is Kyrie.
Mm-hmm.
Just what he's been during this streak, how he's been acclimating in as a whole. It's been very good. But the thing that's encouraging to me is that it hasn't been like amazing. Like he isn't doing anything above his capabilities in my mind. Particularly on the offensive end. He's had bad shooting nights. They've won in spite of it. And I guess obviously the defense has been much better than advertised so far. But what have you seen there?
I mean, he's not forcing anything, right?
He's forcing, I think, like a very little. Like that top of the three key against Atlanta, like at the end of that game was like a random, like, what are you doing shot? But then for every one of those, there's like five good plays.
Yeah, I don't ever, like, mind when he does things like that because he's just one of those guys who has a permanent green light at all times in basically any situation, and you have to give it to him. You have to permit him to be himself. But the way he's kind of evolved in this offense where I wrote about this a little bit yesterday, it just seems to me like he's really understanding the value of how he's able to create for himself and turning that into unselfish plays as opposed to, you know, contested fall away long twos that he would take with the Cavaliers that would go in like 45% of the time. And those are great and amazing. And that's why he's one of the better point guards in basketball. But right now he's really leveraging all of that to make plays for others. And it's been phenomenal. I was asked on Twitter the other day if he's the MVP of the league. I think that might be a slight exaggeration. You would look at a team, first of all, we're like 10, 12 games of the season.
I don't know if he's the MVP of this team.
Yeah, I would agree there. I thought that Al Horford was clearly the most valuable, or Marcus Smart, of course, who has the highest net rating. but when you just look at his takeover moments in big spots, particularly against the Thunder, that was incredible. And then their most recent game, he was phenomenal, obviously. So he's completely surprised me in a lot of ways.
And he's shooting 32% from three, Mike. Like,
and like 27 on wide open threes. He's getting like almost two a game, and he's not hitting those. So, like, when he gets it going, like the 22 points per game he's averaging now will be up to like 28, 29. And that's who he'll be this season, I think.
Yeah. I mean, the offense has been good. The defense, for me, is what has stuck out. And again, it's early. We'll see if he sustains it, but the buy-in is clearly there, and, you know, he just has, like, you know, he takes risky gambles sometimes, but he also has a much better defensive IQ than, you know, I just remember watching Cleveland. And that may just be, a byproduct of being in a system where there's accountability and there's, you know, better scheming.
Right. I've kind of tracked, I've been looking at, when he gets hit with a high screen, his effort levels, and That's something I've kept an eye on, and that's kind of been not so great this year.
Right.
But that's just one aspect of defense. I think his rebounding has really surprised me. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of one of those little things where I don't want to compare him to Isaiah too much. But that's kind of those plays where he'll grab a defensive rebound. Those are the types of things that Isaiah just like couldn't do because Kyrie is like 4 or 5 inches taller than he is.
Right. And, I mean, we should talk about the rebounding.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's... No one saw this coming. I mean, you thought it would get better with Baines. And Tatum's obviously a good rebounder. We knew that coming in. But just the improvement from pretty much... up and down the roster, like in by individual guys, whether it's Jaylen Brown, whether it's Horford rebounding like it's 10 years ago, like whether it's Daniel Tice just like, you know, really holding his own down there against big guys. It's, I did not expect this to be actually be a strength of this team on both ends. And I know it's only been 12 games, but like, I don't think this is going away.
No, I mean, heading into the year, we talked a little bit about how if you upsize at every position, the rebounding would improve.
Right.
But I didn't expect Horford to post the best defensive rebound rate of his career through the first 12 games.
Right.
And, you know, Gordon Hayward's injury, that kind of threw things off a little bit as well because we assumed that they would be – I mean, Gordon is a big dude, and he would be in lineups where they would have, you know – length advantages over their opponent. But yeah, guys like Rozier, who's like the best rebounding guard his size like of all time, and you know, Jaylen is a very physical presence, and they just have big beefy bodies, and guys are boxing out, and it's just I agree with you. I don't think that this is something that will fall off anytime soon.
I guess you like it's hard to overlook the difference of having a guy like Rozier on the floor for 25 minutes a game, and just in terms of the impact that does have on like rebounding. Because again, for as good as he was rebounding, he really didn't have, you know, he was in and out of the rotation last year for most of the year for good reason.
Mm-hmm.
Like he wasn't playing well. But now that consistency is there, really, you know, just gives them that, you know, on a night where even the bigs aren't having a good rebounding night, like, you know, Rozier is always going to be there.
Rozier's going to be there. The wings that we just talked about are going to be there. I think like they're averaging, Tatum's averaging 5. Jaylen's averaging 5.5 defensive rebounds a game. Yeah, it's been a definite bright spot. I mean, just defensively as a whole, I think one of the numbers that's really stuck out to me also is their free throw rate. So like I was looking at cleaningtheglass.com, which is like one of the best websites, and I will continue to shout it out religiously. But the Celtics, if you look at how they've performed for the past like 15 years, they've never ranked better than 18th, and they're usually in the high 20s in opposing free throw rate. This year they are 6th best in the league, so they're not fouling at all. They're just very disciplined. Guys are where they're supposed to be. And I mean, heading into this season, we talked about how they would need time to mesh. And, you know, a lot of that focal point there was on the offensive end. But, I mean, defense is just as important. And it just looks like these guys have been playing basketball together for years. It's amazing.
Yeah. And there's no – I wrote about this on the Boston Sports Journal this week as well. But there's really no glaring weaknesses in the defense. Like, in any position. I mean, obviously Kyrie for on screens and containing penetration. But that's like, you know what you're getting there. But – up and down the roster, I'm not sure there's a subpar defender in the rotation now, especially with the jump that, I mean, Brad Stevens specifically shouted out Terry Rozier's jump defensively. You know, Jaylen is taking a big leap there as well. Tatum's in a whole different, we'll get to him just in terms of how advanced he is on both ends already. But Jaylen, this is a big year for me to him in terms of, you know, just like the mental mistakes, the help defense, the not recognizing, not switching on screens, all that stuff that was like would get him pulled off the floor last year. It's still happening a little bit, but, you know, not nearly as much. And
they're letting him play through a lot of the mistakes, which you have to because of the depth chart. But like there was, I think, was it the Laker game where he picked up two fouls and I left him in? Or was that the game before that?
No, it was the game before that. I think it was the Hawks game.
Right, they left him in. He picked up two quick fouls, and he picked up a third, and I thought Brad was obviously a little upset there, and I don't think Jalen closed that game because of the foul trouble. Overall, I mean, he's just such a physical presence. Like, he's just so strong. He's so mobile. He's so versatile. Like, he's really stepped it up. But like I can we talk about Tatum, because like he blocked Brook Lopez from behind like without jumping the other night, and it's like his arms are so long. It's like he's incredible. I wrote about a Dennis Schroeder in the thing, the same article that I wrote about Kyrie, and just Schroeder's just like blowing by everybody this season and scoring at the rim and is like posting all-star numbers, and his speed is ridiculous. And there was one play where he blew by Tatum just like recovered, kept his arms up, and swatted the ball against the backboard. Like, no one's doing that, and Tatum is making plays like that.
It's, again, when Brad in summer league, Brad Stevens, you know, he's out there in Vegas to watch all these games. And he usually doesn't give much praise or any overt praise to these guys during summer league, because it's summer league and you don't want to like boost up the rookies. But even after the first game, we're like, oh, what do you notice? And he's like, yeah, Tatum's defense is a lot better than I thought it'd be. And we were like, oh, like that's interesting, especially given his rep going to the draft. That was a potential weak point. But like, clearly they saw it very early that like, this guy was very underrated on that end, or just had the tools to be to translate on that end. And for him to handle the heavy minutes load and the type of matchups, you know, this early in the year, I mean, we know, and then we haven't even talked about the offense yet and how efficient that's been and how underutilized he's been. He's only taking 8 shots a game, averaging 13 points, shooting 50% from the field.
I don't think I've seen him miss an open three yet.
I did the research on this. I don't know if you saw his article, Mike, on Monday. He is 9 of 11 on corner threes.
Okay. Yeah, those are Steph Curry numbers.
It's just like straight up the best corner three shooter in the league in the first 1/8 of the season.
It's so funny because like this is why watching college is stupid and a waste of time. Like, seriously, like the knocks on him were just like, he is Rudy Gay 2.0. He is not a 3-point shooter. He does not have any interest in playing defense. He's not fast enough to play defense at the NBA level. He's like a mid-range specialist who takes tough long twos. Like, that's just not who he's been at all. It's like,
no.
It's amazing. I think also, like, obviously, you know, you have to give credit to, it's really interesting, the context here where Josh Jackson says that he doesn't want to come to Boston because it's just he didn't say this, but this was kind of inferred.
He didn't want to come to Boston.
Yeah, right. And
his agent didn't want him to come.
Right. And Lonzo Ball also, but for different reasons. It's easier to compare Jackson here, and Jackson basically didn't want to be bogged down behind Jalen and Gordon, or this was before Gordon actually, but he just didn't want to be bogged down on a winning team where he wouldn't have an opportunity to play big minutes. And that was stupid. That was really, really like not the right philosophy to have. And context is so important in the NBA. And the way that they've utilized Tatum and the way he's accepted this change in responsibilities is just really impressive.
What, we're recording this on a Friday. He went out with that ankle injury right now in Wednesday night's game.
Mm-hmm.
Celtics have to be careful with him now. Like, he was playing big minutes earlier in the year when they had no other options. he has an, you know, history of, you know, foot issues last year at Duke. Given how good he's looked, and the fact you have Marcus Morris back now, I would sit him down for like a few days, even if you don't need to, just to like not screw with it.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I wouldn't be overly cautious. I think I obviously am not a doctor. I don't know what exactly his issue is right now or injuries he's suffered in the past. But I would just be cautious about, you know, disrupting the rhythm of him and just his flow within how the Celtics are playing right now. He's just such an integral part of what they do. And I just wouldn't want to unnecessarily be overly cautious, especially just like, I know it's still like you're not playing for this season, even though a lot of people will get upset by that statement.
But listen, Michael, like the Cavs are 5 games behind the standings right now.
When you say that out loud, it's,
which is nuts. After 12 games, they are 5 games behind the Celtics in the standings. So they're not playing for this season yet. I agree, but I feel like that once Isaiah Thomas comes back, we see what he looks like, that could change, based on the rest of how the Eastern Conference looks.
Yeah, just, do you think this team is going to be as conservative as they were at last year's trade deadline?
No, I don't. I don't think they're going to take big risks, but I do think having that disabled player exception is a nice little way to like legitimately add without subtracting. Like, you can just, you know, you don't have to match salaries. You don't have to lose a guy. You have the open roster spot. This is a great excuse to bring up my guy, Marco Bellinelli, in Atlanta, who we saw put up a nice game on Monday night. He's making, I think, $6.3 million on expiring. But at the same time, they have a ton of money to throw at a guy who gets bought out, too, if that happens, which I don't think it's going to happen for like a guy like Greg Monroe. I feel like Phoenix will be able to trade him for, you know, for something. So I'm not even sure. I honestly might even prefer a guy like Bellinelli compared to a guy like Monroe, just in the scope of what this team is right now, since I feel like this team could use another shooter more than another big guy down low.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be upset if they acquired, if Monroe were to get bought out. But at this, I'm 100% with you. I think Bellinelli would be a better fit. And it you know, I don't know what his market value will be.
Second round pick. If, like, he's not getting anything more. If PJ Tucker was getting a second round pick, then
Bellinelli's gonna get more than that. For sure. But again, like, if you look at just the landscape, and there's a lot of things that can happen between now and then, but if the Cavaliers are still struggling, I think teams in the East will, they could get pretty aggressive, like a team like the Wizards, or I think a team like the Wizards would entertain forfeiting like a protected future first. So like, that's not something the Celtics would be interested in doing, I don't think, for a guy like Marco Bellinelli, and that could screw things up. But or a team like maybe even like the Minnesota Timberwolves that really needs another body on the wing. But like, yeah, I'm just really excited about this team. I think a lot of what's happening right now is gravy, and how they're playing with house money, and the fact that they are doing it with defense is just, it's one of the most amazing things in the league right now. And it's a joy to see.
And they're doing it with defense, and they're doing it with rookies everywhere. Like
youngest Tice, team in the Eastern Conference, I think.
Shemi is now that he found like his jump shot looking like a, you know, a guy that's going to be a great role player for this team for the next 4 years.
I have a quick thing I wrote down in my notes the other night.
Yep.
If you see the development with Semi and you see the development with Rozier, how does that impact what they do with Marcus Smart?
I mean, I think it it makes it easier if someone overpays him with an offer sheet. It makes it easier to walk away and just be like, we love you, Marcus, but we're not paying you $18 million a year. I think that's, yeah. I think that's what it absurd. Does. Yeah. Right. Or even like $15 million a year, because you're going to have to pay Rozier too. And, you ideally would like to keep both, but fiscally it might be tough. I think the good news is for the Celtics from their standpoint is that our old friend Marcus Smart, is shooting 30% from the field. And 32% for 3-point range. So
leads the team in net rating, though, B-Rob.
I know. Listen,
making ridiculous plays.
He's had a very good year. I know, but I'm just saying it makes it harder for other teams to justify giving him over $10 million a year when you're shooting 30% from the field. I'm not sure many guys in NBA history have been signed at big contracts when you're a career, like, 32% shooter. Just like you... He can do all the little things all you want, but like if you're going to, he's a great fit for this team given what he does. But if you have, not a lot of teams are going to have the cap space to spend, and the teams that do, I don't think, you know, Smart might not be worthy of the big money for them. And that's good. Again, this is all good for the Celtics in terms of how they're handling this and their hope of getting Smart back at a number that makes sense for them.
Yeah, you know, my thoughts on Marcus Smart, and as Kyrie said, and after the win over the Lakers, that the little things are the big things for the Celtics team. So, in reference to Marcus Smart,
how does Smart's figure look like to you? Our buddy, the third man of this podcast, Rich Levine, let us know before we recorded that he thought the weight might be starting to come back a little bit for Marcus as the season's progressed. What have you noticed that, or do you think he looks so good out there?
I think he looks he looks fine. it hasn't caught my eye like it's caught Rick's, but did I say Rick?
Yeah, you said Rick. Is Rick Levine?
Oh Jesus!
I know it's. It's not even early. It's the afternoon. We can't even say it's morning. You see us now.
I think I've had too much coffee, actually. Yeah. there was one play. I think he missed a dunk attempt against the Lakers. And, yeah, I think he was thinking that he approached the dunk, that the attempt was made in a way that's like made me believe that he was throwing those down over the summer. I don't know if his body is trying to tell him something, but no, he looks good to me, and he's still like my favorite player on the team. So, no criticism from Marcus Smart from my end here.
He's played great as well. Mm-hmm. I don't, again, it's easy when you're putting up 9, 4, and 5 a game, it's easy to overlook 30% shooting when the team's winning. So, like, you know, it's no complaints from my end there. Again, there's no, literally every single person on this roster has played at or above expectations through these first 12 games.
Yeah, and is anybody disappointing?
No, like, it's maybe like, you know, would have loved to see more out of Abdel Nader in his, like, even Shane Larkin has had a good game or two. Like,
you know, Shane Larkin, I don't think that there are 10 better players at his position who fight harder on the defensive end.
He does. He's been really nice. And Brad, I mean, we haven't talked about Brad at all kind of putting this together, but
he's Brad has, coach of the year. Like, let's be serious.
He's definitely solidified a top 3 spot. But yeah, Larkin, he's really pushed the right buttons at the right time of guys, whether it was that game back in Philly where they couldn't score for their life, throwing Larkin back into that game just to create some order on both ends of the floor.
That was probably the biggest win of the season, too.
No question. They should have lost. Like, they had – that was a playoff environment. Like, the Philly fans were hungry for blood in that game. The Celtics couldn't shoot for shit. And they were down by probably, like, 10 points in the third quarter, and they and then they threw Jabari Bird and Larkin in there, and that was the answer. Mm-hmm. But yeah, between him, Tice, Ojale, like, obviously Baines has been solid for when he is. It was a huge game for him Wednesday night.
Baines has been so good.
Yeah.
I know that the on-off numbers aren't fantastic, but he's made, like, I think every single jumper that I've seen him take, so.
Yeah, he's very reliable there. And, I mean, Horford, again, is playing. Well, like, the concussion stuff with him is a concern. It's you hate this. He was playing pretty much the best basketball of his career all around, I feel like, in these first 10 games. So, you know, he's probably going to be gone for at least another week with this concussion protocol stuff. But it is top to bottom of this roster. Like, you know, you literally can't complain at all if you're a Celtics fan.
Yeah, Horford's injury is definitely a big deal. I was actually, like, not... When I heard he was out for the Laker game, I was not the most... Like, I was expecting Kyle Kuzma to drop 27 points. Like, it's just... Like, Al Horford's impact on everything is humongous. But what I'll say about him is one of the really neat developments, he did this a little bit last year, but, you know, teams are now, like, opposing bigs or even just whoever's nearby in a rotation. When you close out on Al Horford, they're really biting on his pump fakes.
Mm-hmm.
And his ability to just go put the ball on the floor for two dribbles, collapse, pass, or finish himself. That's been a bit. He's been very aggressive with that this season, and that's just a really good thing to see.
Absolutely, it's again, the passing for him and this whole team has been like, they probably have a whole season full of highlights in 12 games with assists already so far. When is this streak end? We're recording this Friday. So, since we're asking this question, it'll probably be tonight. But the schedule, obviously, the Warriors is the most significant one game on the schedule coming up. But Toronto's coming into town on Sunday, too.
I was going to say the Raptors.
Yeah.
They've got some, like...
They aren't playing great either, though, right? Like, they're up and down.
The Raptors?
Yeah.
Yeah, they had I was just watched their win against the Pelicans this morning. And Kyle Lowry's kind of coming around a little bit after a really slow start. DeRozan hit some threes in that one. I don't know. I like the Raptors, I think. Yeah, they've been a little up and down, but they're like really... I mean, they're integrating a completely new system and playing these like... lineups that are five guys who are all younger than like 24 years old.
So they're like the Celtics.
Just like the Celtics, yeah. Except no Kyrie Irving. Yeah, so I mean, if you look at the upcoming schedule, it's like there's almost two trap games, if you want to call them that. Like the Hornets tonight, and then, because like, I don't know, I feel like maybe the players don't view the Raptors as a big game, but I don't know. Like, I feel like the Celtics organization might just, that's a worthwhile Eastern Conference opponent. Nothing against the Hornets, but they've been really banged up. They had that really bad loss against the Knicks where they couldn't stop anybody.
Yeah.
So I think that's a winnable game. Wouldn't be shocked if they lost to the Hornets though. And then, you know, the Nets right before the Warriors, it's like two games before. That's a monster game at home on Thursday night. So, I don't know. I mean, I would say maybe they'll lose to the Raptors. But if they beat, I don't know, it could conceivably go another three games, like, easily.
Yes, which is nuts given the injuries that they've dealt with during the streak and will continue to if the streak continues. But the good news is we'll have an in-person Big 3 podcast down in Brooklyn for that game. Hopefully we can get Rich in as well from across the country. But yeah, this has been long overdue. I'm glad we hashed things out here, Mike.
Mm-hmm.
And So this team has no problems. And
it's a perfect team.
Perfect team. And they'll be they're on the pace for, you know, close to 70 wins right now. So yeah, we'll see what happens.
I really enjoyed on the Laker broadcast Mark Jackson saying that the team could be undefeated if they just beat the Cavaliers and then beat the Milwaukee Bucks. So I was like, yeah, that's how it works. But they lost those two games.
Really bummed out. I missed listening to him on the broadcast.
It was a pleasure.
Yes. Any closing thoughts here? I think.
No, I mean, I just think that this team is overachieved, obviously. Or maybe they haven't on the defensive end. When you're winning with effort and intelligence as they have and discipline, maybe they haven't overachieved. Maybe that's unfair. I think the offense will improve too, as the, you know, these guys kind of gel and you forget that they've only played 12 games together. And, you know, they had a training camp with Gordon Hayward, and, you know, so it's just a humongous adjustment for everybody. So I think the offense will get even better. And I don't know. I mean, my expectations, like, big picture for this season are still, I think they'll get to the conference finals, and yeah, we'll leave it at that. But yeah, it's been really a tremendous start all around.
They might be a Marco Bellinelli away from the NBA finals.
Might be.
We'll have to tell Vern about that bet a couple years ago, but we'll see that for the next podcast.
Real quick, Malachi Richardson last night, big game against the Sixers and a win for the Kings. Just want to throw that
in. Was that his first? All right, well, we'll explain this now since you brought Malachi Richardson. So 2 years ago when the Hawks, or it wasn't the Hawks, it was when the
Hornets and the Kings.
Hornets and the Kings traded. It was Bellinelli for a first-round pick, I think a couple weeks before the draft, and everyone crapped all over the trade for the Kings, including Michael Pena. Me being a Bellinelli fan.
No, it crapped on it for the Hornets. Oh, for the Hornets traded the pick.
That's right. Because yeah. Bellinelli was on the Kings. I'm flip-flopping teams. Yeah, so yeah. The Hornets got Bellinelli. They wanted an upgrade, a shooter. I was like, yeah, whatever. It's a late first-round pick. It's going to be no one good. Bellinelli's on a reasonable deal. Like, that's not a bad trade. And Mike was just not having it. And so we've been, for 2 years since, have been.
It comes up quite a bit in the text thread.
Yes. Whenever Marco has a good game, I make sure Mike knows. And
now that we're here, like, talking about it, I'm looking at Malachi's numbers. Malachi, 22 years old, rising phenom, shooting 53.8% from the 3-point line, 7 for 13 on the season.
Wow,
he's a force to be reckoned with.
Nice of him to get some minutes in a game or two. So we'll just revisit that at every podcast the rest of the way, just the Malachi Markle update to bore you guys. But in the meantime, that's it for now. We'll be back with you guys next week, live from Brooklyn. Thanks for listening. Subscribe, as always, for those who make it through the podcast. And look forward to being back at full strength next week.